to another episode of the Unpublished Podcast. My name is Amy.
And I'm James on a swivel chair, which will be very dangerous.
Yeah. We should never have allowed this.
Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
I did get this chair for £10, because we're in England now. Pound, which is fake money, if you haven't heard about it. And this was for £10 from the charity shop down the road.
A win.
Yeah.
A win is a win.
Mm-hmm.
We're in England. We have made the move from Sydney to this very cute, quaint country.
Quaint.
We are in our little cottage. It has been a big... how long have we been here? 10 days, maybe.
We got here... This is Tuesday, and we got here Thursday night. Like, two Thursday nights ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So today, anyway, that... I mean, we can update you all on that. It's good. It's been bizarre. My parents have immediately visited. So we're taking this kind of month as like a sabbatical. And my parents being here has enforced that. So we really haven't been working at all, which is good. It's just allowed us to settle. They have lived in this house. They've lived in this area. So they've been really able to show us around. But also it's just a bit weird because we're like, I mean, to me, it just feels like a holiday right now.
Yeah, it does feel like a holiday. It feels very strange, but yeah. Good.
I mean, yeah, I love it here. I feel really at home. This house is so beautiful. Trying to figure out how it's going to work for us is really fun. Today we went to like an antique shop in Wallingford and like looking around and seeing like how do we want to decorate this home. It's been really fun. And I've come away with two words that I really feel like I want to like bring into this home and like is my style at the moment, which is botanical and astronomical. So like... I want like, I don't know, those two words
just came to me.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Thank you. How is your soul feeling about the move, Jamesy?
I feel pretty good. I'm a bit worried about my morning routine, obviously.
Yeah.
I
remain worried. We're very out of routine.
And, you know, for those of you who have followed my writing journey will know how heavily I've relied on the cafe down the road in Sydney to write. I've written all my books there. And the cafe in town doesn't open until 9:30. And remains to be seen if its coffee is drinkable long term.
It's not. Respectfully, Brits don't understand.
I don't want to insult British coffee because, and I've had to accept this, it's a different drink. People in Britain do not understand. Sorry, once again, that's pejorative. People in Britain want something different from their coffee than people in Australia. People in Australia want like a smooth, creamy, if you're drinking milk... or if you're drinking black coffee, something maybe a bit sweet or a bit... This is such a huge divergence. It's not a bitter drink necessarily. Like it has a bitter... It can have bitter notes to it, but it's not necessarily a bitter drink. People in England want to be punched in the face with bitterness. And
very strong coffee.
And once again, I don't want to say burntness, but they burn their coffee.
Burntness.
And that's the taste they think is good because they're wrong, but have learned that. So, yeah. Anyway... Just, we've got a coffee machine at home, so...
Yeah, we bought a beautiful new coffee machine for us, so we are safe. But just in terms of routine, like, we haven't made our routine yet.
Yeah.
And it's hard with mum and dad here. And honestly, it's just not really the time to make routine.
And it's also, it's not the coffee that's really stopping me. I'd go to a cafe and drink average coffee if it meant I could write. It's that it doesn't open until 9:30.
Yeah.
So I like to get my writing out of the way really early so I can have the rest of my day to do other stuff. But it doesn't really work for me to start writing at 9:30. But it might have to.
Yeah, or we might have to find new routines, like you working in different spaces.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to just keep kind of talking about England for a bit before we dive into today's topic, just because it's been such a huge time for us. It's a big, momentous move. I was going to say we arrived in our village called Watlington. I really don't think there's any point of me hiding it. I just have been so obvious about where we live now. And it was Art Weeks.
It's called Art Weeks because Oxford has like 3 or 4 weeks in a row where they exhibit people exhibit their art in different towns, and it sort of moves region to region per week. So it's not just an art week, it's Art Weeks.
It's Art Weeks. Anyway, we arrived in Art Weeks and it was just so synchronous. Like I can't tell you that the second day that we got here, someone came up to me and was like, I love your work. We had people like just artists everywhere. Like I was just speaking, bumping into artist after artist. We saw Jeremy Irons on a fucking bike pegging it down the high street twice. You know, like it's just where we are feels really, well, for me, I don't know how you feel, Jamie, but like those first few days of just being surrounded by creatives and just lots of synchronous things happening. I was like, we're really where we're meant to be.
Yeah, I mean, there are, I think there's a lot of artists, a lot of visual artists in the area. I don't know if there are a lot of writers. Maybe there are. I mean, you often...
No, and then the woman that recognized me and was like, I love your work. She was like, this town is full of writers.
Oh, ah, well, there you go.
It's so cool.
Very cool.
Got owie's tummy all of a sudden.
Oh, sweet. I'm sorry.
I know, what owie's?
Hmm.
Weird. Mm. Yes, so that was really beautiful. And yeah, just settling in.
Yeah.
Very, very slowly.
Yep. Yeah, it's been really, it's really aesthetic here. It's much more
beautiful.
I think in Australia, we rely on our beach, our waterfront a lot. But like England just has
everything.
So much history, you know, so much, I don't know. It's like a castle there and a church there and I don't know.
We're in the country, so really is like incredibly beautiful. And for me, it just brings me home to the stories that I tell. It brings me home to like something really innate in me.
Well, I mean, and for those of you who are interested, Watlington is literally the town that Maud from Amy's second book, regrettably, I'm about to call this trouble. She lives in Watlington.
She lives in Watlington. She actually lives in Sherba, which is like 2 minutes.
But the witches are in Watlington.
The witches are in Watlington.
Mm.
So I'm like in literally the town where my stories are told. And it just feels really good and really right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I feel like we've rambled for long enough, right?
Yeah, of course.
Feel bad for them. It's been like six minutes of rambling. Sorry, that was also very loud into the mic.
I feel like we deserve to give an update just then.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, I wanted to talk today about romanticizing things. We're in an extremely romantic area of the world. Everything feels very romantic. And I have a skill for romanticizing the fuck out of everything. And I've been thinking about this a lot, obviously, as I like literally create the most romantic life possible for me, as I like see the magic and the miracles in everything that I do and just sinking into each moment, romanticizing each moment.
Maybe you could just define romanticizing for people quickly, just because I think there might be some people who English isn't their first language or the metaphor doesn't really, because people might be thinking about romantic love when you say that.
How would you describe it?
I mean, it's interesting. I would say it's like reveling in the beauty of things or sort of idealizing things to the point of reverence almost.
Yeah.
That reverence.
It's often used as a term to say that you're delusional. Like, oh, she romanticizes everything. She, you know, always sees the best in things. She's always, you know... She always thinks everything's going to be great and then it isn't. Like, they're not a realist.
Yeah.
But I feel like I've, like, enjoyed reclaiming that word because I like to see the magic in everything, even if people do feel like it is a bit delusional. Anyway, I've been feeling that and experiencing that a lot. And then I was also considering how fucking practical and how much I refuse to romanticize my creative process, which I just think is an interesting dichotomy that I live within, and I just kind of wanted to unpack it and talk about it and talk about why.
Yeah, you are brutally, for literally the most romantic person I know, maybe not from a romance, but not from our relationship perspective, but in the definition we've been saying before, you are brutally prosaic and brutally workmanlike about your writing.
I am. And I've been listening to Rick Rubin's, not going to be able to remember the name of that book, The Creative...
When have you ever remembered a name to a book in this podcast?
Shut the fuck up, James.
While you talk, I'm taking my jacket off. I'm too hot, so I'm going to try and not make as much sound as I can.
Okay. I'm reading the very big book.
That didn't work.
Okay.
Just rip the Band-Aid off, James.
Just do it.
Rip it off. Throw the jacket. Okay.
I can't remember the name. It's Rick Rubin's book. He's a big music producer, an incredible artist, and he's written this book about creativity. And I was like, I'm going to dive in because I've heard some really good things. And he, as does Julia Cameron, as does a lot of these big creative names, has a really romantic language around the craft that we have. And it's a really popular way to discuss our creativity. This idea that it's like a very spiritual practice, which I'm definitely not opposed to that. I'm not opposed to any of these ideas. It's just the way that I personally approach it. The idea that it's, something that's been given to you by an external force, the idea that it has to be cherished in a very delicate way, the idea that, I don't know, like, how else do people romanticize the creative process?
Yes, I mean, I feel like it goes back to ancient concepts of the muse.
Oh, the muses, yeah.
And as you say, that maybe the gods have imparted some kind of gift upon you that isn't fully in your control or is beyond you in some way or transcends what it means to be human or is, I don't know.
And I think people, in a more day-to-day way, romanticize their art. It's like, it's this like very, you know, important and very delicate time for them to be with themselves. It's almost like a going to church kind of thing. And I love all this. It sounds so beautiful. Like, again, it's so me. All this language feels like me. Like, it's a holy practice that you just like protect with all of your energy. And, you know, that's the romanticizing of art. It's like this incredibly precious practice and thing that we do. Again, I agree with all of this, but I don't approach it that way in my own life. I approach it so practically and so almost brutally. Like, I just refuse to romanticize my writing practice.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is really a podcast topic now that I talk about it.
I think it is. I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting. I think it's a, I think it's so hard to know how to talk about this without, once again, like you kept providing the caveat that this isn't necessarily the way that you, not you, Amy, you, the listener, may approach this. And it's so hard to know how to talk about this without feeling like we're being mean. Or,
yeah.
Because I don't, that's definitely not the intention. It's not the intention to tell people who want to make their art a holy practice that it's wrong, because of course it's not.
It's not wrong.
But it's just like, whenever I've done that, it's meant I've, I also don't want to make it seem like output is the only thing that you, we should care about. Of course it's not the only thing, but I have lost almost like, I've put too much pressure on the practice and made it less fun.
Mm. Yeah, I think when we romanticize the practice, it does put a lot of pressure on it and it does make it very delicate.
Mm.
And I think I've noticed, and the reason why, like, I'm inherently deeply romantic, as I've just said, I think the reason why I have kind of extricated myself from this relationship with art that is romantic is because I've noticed what it does to me and I've noticed how sensitive and delicate it makes my creative practice. I've noticed how emotional it makes me about my practice. Like, I don't want to get upset when writing isn't fun. And I speak to a lot of creatives who, when the writing practice or when their art practice isn't, you know, super fulfilling and super good, like, they just break because they're like, this is my spiritual practice, this is my craft. Like, it doesn't feel good right now. Like, how am I meant to go on? Whereas for me, I've developed this thing where it's like, of course, like, a lot of the time it just feels like shit, and that's just what creativity is.
Mm.
And a lot of the time it's not gonna feel good. It's gonna be really hard. It doesn't always flow very easily. I'm not gonna sit here waiting for the muses to visit me in order to write my books. I am here to tell stories and write novels and to connect with other creatives. And I can't dilly, again, this is very personal, but for me, I don't want to dilly-dally around mollycoddling this practice and romanticizing this practice to the point where it is something that's so sensitive and can be broken so easily. That's how I feel, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of beauty in not that, romanticizing it as well. Like, there's a lot of beauty in turning up and writing 500 words every day. There's a lot of beauty in just coming up with a good idea, like, regardless of whether that's from writing or painting, or if it's from you coming up with a good business idea, or coming up with a good blog post, which, you know, a lot of people wouldn't consider art, but obviously we would argue is art. Just generally making progress on something and enjoy and doing something well in itself can be a really amazing experience without...
Yeah. I think there's been a lot of cultural narratives about what it means to be an artist, and it's left a lot of baggage on modern day artists today, you know, and I think that the stories we've been told about, you know, these long hours and the pain and like the emotional turmoil that people have to go through to create, like, have just created a lot more barriers for us than ease. And I think you're right, James, like, the way that I approach it, the way that you approach it, both of us are very practical creatives. And I think, ironically, it is incredibly romantic and incredibly magical to just take our practice seriously, to show up consistently, and to do the work.
It's funny because it's hard to meet two people who are more head in the clouds about the prospect of artists and the opportunities of art and what art can do for you and how important art is and how art can be fulfilling and, you know, in many ways help you spiritually and mentally.
My God.
But without being delicate or precious about it.
Yeah.
And can I ask you a question though?
Yeah.
Do you wish you could be more romantic about your art?
But so sometimes, like, I wish I could.
Like, is this just a defense mechanism because you've tried, you've in the past been romantic about it and it's burnt you?
I I do. Like, I think I've been thinking recently, oh, I wish I had this, like, you know, real relationship with, like, the ebbs and flows of my creative practices. I wish that I took my writing time as, like, this holy sacred time, but, you know, so often I'll just show up and I'll write. What? It's just, like, it's not precious to me. Like, the whole, you know, the fact that artistry and creativity, like, again, you'll never find anything more precious to anyone. Like, I'm such a fucking proponent for what we do. But the actual art of it has never had this, like, okay, now it's time for me to write, and this is so precious and so good. Like, I sit there, I tell my stories, I leave. And sometimes, yeah, I feel envious of people who have a bit more of, like, a spiritual connection or some sort of romance to it.
I feel like for me, it comes down to, I'm trying to figure out the phrasing here. It's like, be deeply respectful of the artist and be deeply respectful of the fact that they're doing art, but be not at all respectful of the process or something. Or like,
okay, this is what I think it comes down to. Yeah. I think you're nearly there.
Yes.
It's take what you're doing extremely seriously.
Yes.
But don't practice seriously. It's like play. The practice has to be, you know, lighthearted.
Yeah.
But what we're doing and understanding what we're doing is deeply serious work.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's like the romance is like there, but like in the way that we show up. It's playful, it's silly, sometimes it's boring. Mm. It's the creative's life.
I think when you think about people who are prolific and extremely successful artists, and that might not be something that you're striving for, and all power to you, that's totally fine, of course. If you want art to be something that's not something that you are it's like, if you don't want to be Brandon Sanderson, if you don't want to be, you know, the biggest painter in the world or the biggest artist in the world, that's totally fine. But the people who do that are often very workmanlike about it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, they sit down from this time to this time and they just do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'm very, very serious about my craft. and it's funny because that has ended up in me just being very workmanlike about it. And again, it doesn't mean I'm not having fun. You know, a lot of the time it's like so fucking joyful, but
yeah,
it's not.
And also, I wouldn't do it if it sucked.
Yeah. You will never find two people who will bail on something that sucks. Yeah, more
I wouldn't
than me
do it
James.
If it really sucked. Like, I'm not saying like it should be painful or bad.
No,
I'm saying it should be. It's like take the pressure off of yourself so that when it is bad, it's not horrible. Like, as you said earlier, Amy.
Yeah, I think taking yourself seriously, I think mistranslates to putting a lot of pressure on each and every one of your creative sessions. When in reality, taking yourself seriously means just fucking showing up and I don't know how else to describe it apart from with that sound.
I think taking yourself seriously often means having a plan. It often means figuring out what it means for you to be able to do your best work. Like,
yeah.
It means figuring out your rhythms and your systems. Like, these are the things that taking you seriously. It doesn't mean like, I don't even know the language to describe it.
I know,
it.
I'm really so struggling with the language.
I'd love to hear from you guys if there's anything you can think, like if you can fill in some of the words we're looking for here. But
I want to talk about briefly about some of the artists that I think get really idolized for a very romantic relationship with their art. And again, fuck, we just always try and nuance it. You know us. We love you. We're not trying to pass judgment here. And we're trying to have a conversation. Mm. Neil Gaiman. I was literally saying today, I would love to revisit the Neil Gaiman podcast episode with Tim Ferriss, because Neil very rarely gives interviews. He's a writer, if you don't know. He's a very famous writer. And he's such a fucking romantic. He's such a romantic. And you know why I love listening to that podcast? Because I'm like, oh my God. And immediately after I listen to that podcast and I literally go back and re-listen to it, I want to have this romantic relationship with my art, but it doesn't work for me.
Maybe, yeah, and that's the thing. It doesn't work for us. Like, I'm sure there's a large percentage of the population that it does work for. And I'm obviously wrong to saying, I'm not saying all prolific authors all prolific artists are workmanlike. Obviously not true. Obviously,
but just a lot are.
Many aren't.
Yeah.
It's so funny because I was going to say Neil Gaiman is workmanlike because I was going to give his example of how he goes to the end of the garden without anything. He just sits there with his, I think he has a typewriter.
No, first of all, he goes there. I think a romantic notion of creating is one of working for hours and hours and hours. And right. Neil is a big proponent for just like taking hours and hours and hours out of his day. And he doesn't go to the shed at the back of his garden. He goes and he books out a house. It's like a holiday. And he doesn't take his phone. He just sits there and he doesn't create. You know, you disagree with that? You think it's at the bottom of his house?
Sorry, I haven't listened to it for too long. I'm probably misremembering.
And then he writes everything in fountain pen again. Yes. Deeply romantic. But and I tried it.
Yeah.
That's so romantic.
Do you think so?
I mean, it works.
It just seems impractical to me, which is. But that's what
I
think. Thing.
It's deeply impractical to me. Like I tried it. I was like, this is not working for me. Like, great that it works for Neil, but it doesn't work for me. And I think I work with a lot of creatives who are trying to replicate a lot of the romantic history and narratives that we've inherited from artists before us. And at the end of the day, it's like, well, is this really your path to success? Is this really the way that you are going to thrive as a creative? And if you want to do it because you just fucking want to do it, then good. But if you're just doing it because you have a kind of addicted or really married to this idea that the artist has this really romantic journey and it's like every moment is so precious, like I think you're going to come across issues.
Yes. Yeah. We should have prepared way more for this topic. So hard.
It is. It's really interesting. And like, as always, we'd love to hear from you and have further conversations about this.
Mm.
But it's just something that was coming up for me quite a lot recently, especially as I listened to this Rick Rubin stuff, because so much of it is very serious.
Mm.
And I just don't take my art that seriously.
I mean, but don't you think, obviously we've already touched on this before in the episode, but do you think there's a problem that it's like if artists don't take what they're doing in the moment seriously, like no one will because society doesn't value us enough?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really valid point. And maybe by romanticizing and like having rituals around it, it allows us to sink deeper into it. Mm. I honestly don't think there's a right answer or way to do it here. I just thought it was an interesting thing for me to notice about me.
Yeah, I think that what annoys you, which I feel like you've told me annoys you before, isn't when artists... So annoys is not the right word. What you look at and you go, there's a better way when you see it happen in artists. And obviously, once again, not passing judgment on if you do this. It's when people like it's a perfectionism thing, right? It's perfectionism. It's like, I cannot possibly write or do my art today because I don't have 12 hours and I haven't got all the candles out and I haven't done a cleansing ritual and I haven't, you know, I just can't even... All the things.
I don't have my fountain pen yet. The requirements. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think you're right. I think that romanticizing your creative process is actually just perfectionism in disguise. And that's something you have to look at. And perhaps the real romance is... Well, the real romance is in the mess. Like, I know that with my whole heart.
And just like in everything, you know, some people do manage to always have... You know, like their perfect situation, they're able to get it more often than not. And they're able to... I don't want to enable the perfectionists out there, but for some people, it does work to do the whole ritual thing. And maybe they need to do a 2-hour preparation session. And then they suddenly are able to write why am I so writing biased?
Because you're a writer.
I know. Just whenever I say write, just hear whatever you do. Okay.
Just replace it.
So that maybe they need a 2-hour preparation and then suddenly they just like are pouring out pure gold after that. Because they've like primed themselves for it. Like an athlete would warm up.
Really believe that those people are in the very, very big minority. Can you be in a big minority?
Like
small minority.
Yeah. A big minority, yeah. It's a very different meaning.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think that we can get really trapped in those kind of stories.
And also it's, you know, all well and good if it's your full-time job, but if...
Sorry.
Okay, that was a dramatic reaction.
It's because I had a thought and now it's gone.
You don't remember what it was? It was so big.
It was so big.
Felt like you were about to get...
You know, I think I was about to say, like, art just isn't that... doesn't need to be that hard.
Mm.
We don't need to be waiting for these muses. We don't need to be chasing these ideas. We can just create crap and something will come of it.
Mm.
And just, we don't need to be, like, taking it, like, this seriously. That's my thought. My tummy really always... I think we have to stop.
We stop. Everyone, I'm really sorry about the ramble.
This was a rogue podcast to come back to.
Hopefully we had a point somewhere.
Well, hopefully it just allows everyone to have a big thinky.
And let us know what your thoughts were. Have a little thinky. Maybe I'll try and engage on the podcast account on IG.
Oh, yeah.
About this.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, my babies, we've missed you. We're grateful for you. Thanks for coming on the journey across the world with us.
And also, just to fill you in on a few things that are coming your way in the next couple of months around the Inspired to Write brand. We're doing a relaunch of Regrettably, I'm About to Cause Trouble next month, meaning that Amy doesn't... And I both feel like we didn't give it enough time when it came out in December, so we're going to really try and push it next month. So would really appreciate your support and your help. If you have read and loved the book, to maybe say some nice things about it, or engage with us at some point when we do talk about it.
Yeah. This is also an invitation, and if you're on my mailing list, you'll get an email about it soon, to relaunch any work that you feel needs a relaunch. I think this is a concept I haven't really seen done much, but we're about to relaunch a book that I launched like a few months ago because it deserves it. And I know that you have art that probably needs a relaunch too. So you're very welcome to join me in the month of June in relaunching a creative project.
Yep. And then the other thing is we're planning to do, and we'd love your feedback on, is we're planning to do a few more courses as a part of the podcast, but not courses, like series. So we might do like a journaling series.
Oh, on the podcast?
On the podcast, yeah. Or a, you know, procrastination perfectionism series or something like that. A bit more structured and a bit more, you know, thematic, which I think might, if you have any ideas of things we might do, we'd love to hear from you. But yeah. I think you might have like a 6-episode block where we talk about, you know, one thing or something, or
we can go a bit deeper.
Yeah, a bit deeper. So that's something that we're thinking about. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Always love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay, poor Amy's tummy.
Okay,
thanks for being with us, everyone.
See you next week.
Maybe.